My laptop is about to run out of battery, so I shall be brief. Probably could have not spent that 20 seconds wasting time talking about the battery. Battery, battery, battery. On today's podcast, we have Heroes on the Home Front. We have Luke and Ben, another veterans charity, another veterans thing we're talking about today. I'm sensing a theme. It wasn't planned. It's just a coincidence. Yeah, very interesting podcast. A little bit more serious than we can normally produce, but that's a good thing sometimes. Yeah, just amazing that we managed to stay on track. So don't go to Robbie's Chop Shop. Don't get a haircut. Check out Tiny Sumo, all your fight news traps. He's got a chat with Ensign anyway, which has made me very, very jealous. Check that out. It's amazing. DC OB20 is our current podcast. Get you 20% off and $5 will be donated to Force of Inspiration 24-hour live rolling. And macro meals. Buy some macro meals. Anyway, battery's about to die. Check it out. Heroes on the Home Front, Instagram, Facebook. Enjoy the chat.
I'll kiss you on the lips and take you to Italy.
That is a classic.
Shut your mouth. What are you talking to me?
Anyway, no time for nonsense. Gotta get down to business.
We're gonna get straight to the point. We've got no time for nonsense.
No time for messing around. Straight to the point.
No time for fluffing about. Straight to it. Just straight to the point.
Just gotta get on with it.
Better not be honeygetting me, bro.
Don't you look at me in that tone of voice. I'm Peter Zane. Now, ladies and gentlemen, allow me to introduce to you, from the depths of our twisted imaginations, the DCE Pirate Radio Podcast.
It doesn't make any sense.
The Pirate Radio Podcast, my friend.
That is such an
idiot. It is recording. You can stop.
Okay. And away we go.
I think we'll flip things up. Our guests are going to introduce us today.
Oh, that's a brilliant idea.
Not really. It was purposely the stupidest thing I could think of, and I'm glad that you jumped on that.
Well, obviously.
As a supportive friend, you lift me up.
Business associate.
Yeah. I'm the wind's difference. Yeah. I'm the wind beneath your wings. Not between your legs. I get those confused.
How? Elaborate.
Well, wings are kind of like legs for birds.
No, they're not. They're actually like arms.
And birds have legs.
Yeah, exactly.
And what about birds that have arms?
They don't.
They're what about wings?
name a single bird that has arms.
A penguin.
They do not have arms.
Bin chicken.
Penguins do sort of have arms. They can't.
Explain. I'll elaborate again. We'll get you guys in there. I need to know more about this.
I'm intrigued.
Explain how a penguin, particularly of all the bird species, has arms.
Well, because it's got little arms.
Like wings.
Well, sort of, but they don't fly with them.
They've got fingers. They got elbows?
Thumbs?
Have they got wrists?
Well,
they've got elbows.
They've got elbows.
They've got just flappers.
Big what, sorry?
Flappers. You heard me.
Let's not go down that path.
I'll introduce our guests.
Anyway, okay. Did you say I'll introduce?
I'll introduce our guests.
Hello, today on the podcast. This is Matt. Hello, today on the podcast, we've got Yoey and Luke.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
I'm getting bored with this game.
Yeah, okay. we're not real good at introducing people because it feels weird, especially because we're in the same room. So I'm just going to refer to you by your names, but you can give us a rundown of yourselves. We'll start with Luke because he's more handsome.
Oh, thank you for that kind start, James.
You may as well, yeah. You can go wild. Tell us a little bit. Probably
give us the plug now because this is going to derail immediately.
Yeah.
So,
anything
you hope to get out of this, do it soon and do it quickly.
So just go 100%. Just plug in here on the home front. Just veterans charity. Get behind it. Support it.
Tell us about
50% of JAMU profits are going to charity.
Yeah.
At the moment, that's fine. We can do that.
50% of nothing.
We're actually in the red, so.
Yeah, Benny takes care of finances. So
that's a problem.
Continue that chat later.
That's a problem. He can't read or write.
Numbers aren't words, James.
And also, penguins have hands.
Elbows.
Oh, it's amazing how quickly he took the high road after describing how penguins have arms.
Well, they do.
And then immediately,
that
person's an idiot because you can't read or write.
tell us about where did Heroes on the Home Front start from?
But I started like, 2016 now. Sort of a brainchild of my wife's. She thought I'd had set something up for females and partners of veterans to have them supported here on the home front. So they called it Heroes on the Home Front. Obviously, the unsung heroes of the forces and the guys overseas, like supporting the country and fighting for it. So she sort of started with it, and then I sort of got out of the army. And
yeah, so you were still serving at the time?
I was still serving at the time. I was on my way through a medical discharge, and then obviously she was working full-time to help support us, obviously because my wages went down. And then I sort of said, oh, well, I'll start doing a little bit of marketing and get a little bit of following for it and build it up. And then I sort of just, like a good husband, took it over. just made it mine.
So, oh, good start, dear. Yeah. Thank you. I'll take care of that now.
Yeah, it's sort of just blown up over the last couple of years. Just, success because of me. So I like to think of it that way.
Oh, dear. And Mr. Yeomans?
Yeah, I just sort of tagged along.
Just thought it did pretty much the same thing. Like, oh, you started a thing. Cool, it's mine now.
he's like my work wife now.
Yeah. No, I'm medically separated in 2014, 2015, something like that. And then moved back to Adelaide, bounced between about 400 jobs. I didn't have an understanding of any of my injuries at the time. Being an alpha male, I refused to accept them. Also, they caught up with me pretty quick. And then Luke and I actually met on
dating site.
It's like a Tinder thing, but for like
veterans.
Dudes who don't.
Now I can't tell if this is a joke or not. This could be, you're saying it with a very legitimate kind eyes.
Yeah. Now we met through a veterans rehab course to help assimilate back into society properly. And then through there, we just sort of kept talking and I couldn't get rid of him and here we are. So.
Funny how that works. I was just going to say, I'm like, everyone in this room can relate to that.
You get past the friend stage, become family, and then I can say bad things about you.
Yeah, horrible things, but to each other's face. Yeah. Mm. So we were laughing about that the other day. You get to the point where you say nice things behind each other's back and horrible things to each other's face, and that's when you know you've reached that point. It's like, I will defend you to the fucking hilt when you're not around, but as soon as you're in the room...
I'm throwing you under the bus.
Continuously.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you have any follow-up questions?
Yeah. Do you know why James was late today?
Yeah, he had a 45-minute drive to be here, and then 2.5 hours before our said start time, he was running late.
Got stuck in traffic.
Yeah,
because I got contacted at 8:30. It's supposed to be an 11:30 start. Or it's supposed to be 11 start.
11 start.
What time did you guys find out about he's going to be late?
About 9:15, I think the message came through that he was stuck in traffic.
So he was he knew quite early on that he was going to be
late. Stuck in traffic.
Yeah, stuck in traffic. It was quite...
He's almost like a wizard.
Going to be stuck in traffic.
I am a lot like a wizard. I am a lot like a wizard.
He's like a wizard.
The flip side of this is for a long time, for the longest time, Matt used to get angry at me for not keeping people in the loop with things like this. So today, I knew this was going to happen.
Oh, you knew that people might be a little bit put out by you inconveniencing. You stole half an hour from three men in their prime. That's what you did. So let's see how you justify this and make us the bad guys.
Next time, I'm just not going to tell any of you and rock up late and just be like, yeah, sorry, I'm late.
Oh, that's better. You know what? You know, there's a third option. There's a door number three.
What?
Rock up on time, you fucking idiot.
I couldn't. That wasn't.
Out of my control.
That wasn't an available option.
Yeah. So you were like, at 9 o'clock, I'll tell you what, I'm going to do a 2.5 hour drive. I'll start in 2 hours. It's only half an hour. She'd be right.
Out of my control.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
You could almost call it an act of God.
Yeah.
You're right. You know, we are all in the wrong, and you're right.
Hey, no, like I said, next time...
If you think James is right, please message James at the
He's done this for, like, the last four podcasts. I'm yet to get an email. It's good.
It started as a running joke because James did it randomly, but podcast two.
If anyone has any questions, send them through to James at Dirty Clean. He's never got an email.
Hey, no one's ever going to fucking email anyway. People are only ever going to write back immediately.
Yeah. They might email you late.
Yeah. You get one half hour.
Hey, you get the email. Yeah. Hey, you know what? Whatever time they email me, it's the right time.
So now I think it's funny. And the only email we've got is apparently he's been doing naughty things. But so was I. I've got the same email.
Oh yeah. With the last time we were looking at porn,
No, we've got separate emails. But at the same time, so maybe.
Maybe We were, what was it? Devious and perverted.
Yeah, we were very bad people.
And the person that was emailing us had activated our camera and had footage of us being perverted and disgusting.
I can actually understand that because the whiteboard to my left has sex doll Insta written on it.
Yeah, that's...
Did you want to explain that?
We did, but that was... No, what was that?
That was the last... Yes, on the last podcast. So there's an Instagram page we found...
touching on this devious and perverted thing.
It was sponsored. It was really, really weird. We'll talk about it again because it was weird. I think it's a doll. I think it's a super high, a realistic sex doll. And James thinks
I thought it was a real person.
The reason I think it's a realistic sex doll because it does look like a real person is the wording behind it seems masculine. So in my mind,
I didn't read the comments. I just looked at the
when TV. You get to that third, fourth paragraph. It really starts to come across masculine.
Yeah, okay. And this is one of those guys. I only fucking buy Hustler to read the articles. Yeah.
So it's this Instagram page, and it's like artistic photography of what I think is a posed sex doll.
We'll show you.
I believe the definition is pornography.
No, it had clothes on. Yeah,
yeah. It had like a bikini on, and
she or it.
She. Well, it depends. She. If it's a sex doll she's or if it was a...
Hey, she's got feelings too, probably.
Yeah, she
Robot
does.
Overlord.
Or a CPU.
But then the writing underneath it was like...
I thought it was in Chinese.
I translated it, man. Maybe it was. Maybe I'm reading my own writing.
But like, hello, my name is Matt. Where are you from? Wow, this really sounds like a dude's writing. Are you sure you're not just messaging them?
Maybe. Now, it had a slightly creepy, it reminded me of Black Mirror. Like, it was slightly creepy, made you unnerved, but it was interesting.
Have you watched Black Mirror?
No. I'm not devious, sorry.
Yeah. You are perverted.
So, yeah, long story short, written in the first person, as if this sex doll was a real person that was trapped for some reason by the photographer, I can only assume.
possibly a sex doll, possibly a fucking captive.
But if it was written in third person.
The first person.
No, but if it was written in third person, it'd be like,
there'd be another
doll thing. Wants to have sex with you. See how it's like weird?
Oh, yeah, that's better.
Yeah. I feel like you should stick your finger in said doll. Like, it just sounds a bit odd.
It does sound odd. Well, it was also Japanese. I don't know if that helps.
Stick up, mate.
Oh, and we're going down the racist.
This is why again. We said get it out of the way early.
Yeah.
Anyway.
This is why we should also clean up.
we
should actually have talking topics so you don't get off track.
No, we used to do that, but normally we find with guests, you guys come up with stuff that we don't think of anyway. So.
Says the bloke who said penguins have arms.
Damn it. Not going to live that one down for a little while, am I?
I once said the Romans built the pyramids, so. Hey,
maybe Roman aliens built the pyramids.
Well,
first.
Turns out that dinosaurs and people never coexisted.
Yeah, that was on that documentary you were telling me about.
Well, that's a good point, James. Flintstones. Aren't some dinosaurs classified as birds, and they actually do have arms?
Oh.
So you're saying a T-Rex is a dinosaur that has wings?
No,
but some...
Pterodactyl. They got little hands.
Are they called birds, or are they just the ancestors of birds?
No, we're going to have to Jurassic Park. Yeah.
There's only one way to get the bottom of this. All right, where's Chris Pratt?
Stop the podcast. We go and watch Jurassic Park, not Jurassic 5. That's a different thing. Yeah.
That's a really bad band.
That's hurtful.
James likes Jurassic 5.
Right? I like Jurassic 5.
What happened to Jurassic 4? That's what I really want to know.
Jurassic 7, 8, 9, I don't know. That was bad. Someone else talk. I've run out of good humour.
I think we should talk about Yoey's Invictus efforts.
Yeah, that's about point. It's like, tell us a bit about yourself. It's like, oh yeah, I was in the army and now I'm not, and I'm done. Stop being modest.
That's the long and short of it.
I'm going to use the photo of you with the underpants on your head as the cover photo for this podcast.
Yeah, no, just that. It was a proud moment in my life. My wife was extremely stoked with that on the papers.
Worldwide papers.
Pretty much epitomised me and my life.
You kind of were like a superhero, though, because you were kind of incognito.
I feel like it's the next Superman, to be honest. Now, that was interesting. Yeah, he was given a pair in the morning for the Australian team, which I was unaware of. So I thought I'd try and get him to sign mine.
Why did they... You were in running events, though, right?
Yeah, so I went to watch
the... So why'd they give you budgie smugglers?
You obviously you've never done sprinting before.
Yeah, so
yeah, look at me. Do I look like a sprinter?
For rehab purposes, obviously go to the pool afterwards.
And swim. Yeah. Gotcha. Gotcha.
And yeah, so obviously I wanted to get him signed. I was unaware that the royal family don't sign things.
Okay.
That aren't official documents. I think.
Who is he? What's the Invictus Games and why were you there?
Oh, okay. He is Prince Harry.
Yeah.
Huzzah. And then the Invictus Games is for ex-serving military personnel who have been injured in duty, whether it be overseas or at home.
Yeah.
And obviously you have, there's a lot of categories similar to like the Paralympic categories, but obviously a lot of our people are almost able-bodied.
Yeah.
So the effects are more in the mind.
Yeah.
And then obviously a lot of injuries you can't see. So it goes all the way from sort of, there's a fella called Mark Ormrod, who is a triple amputee. He participated and won 612 medals. Wow. And then all the way through to someone like myself who's completely able-bodied.
Won six medals.
Bit cooked in the head. So, yeah, so that was really good. And you get a variety of people. There was 18 countries, I believe. Over 500 participants. So
yeah, wow. And it wasn't started by Prince Harry?
So there's a competition over in America called the Warrior Games.
Yep.
That he went and experienced and obviously had a passion to deliver it overseas to a wider broad. Yeah. So the Warrior Games are used for the trials for the Americans. And then the British started going in, Canadians and Australians with teams as well. So just a bigger one of that.
Yeah. So what countries are involved? So it's US and the Commonwealth countries?
Yeah, but also
Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah,
and
so it's essentially, I think, Sweden are jumping in on the next ones, I believe.
Yeah.
So it's just branching out to more and more. It's not so much like teams. It's just any country that is willing to participate. And although, like Luke touched on, Afghanistan were there and obviously countries that we've had conflicts with. But, you know, you're injured, it's just what it is, and then everyone can rehab together. So, has a good mix.
Yeah.
And so how do you qualify?
You just got to have a few issues. So obviously, injuries from serving.
Yes. Yeah, but then so do you, like...
You get an application process.
Yeah, so you apply.
You apply. It's utilised as a rehabilitation tool.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But obviously, it's about getting people back into sport and using that as a rehab tool. Because obviously, it's quite a heavy influence while you're serving, is being fit and all that sort of stuff. Obviously, you have injuries, you're removed from that environment being military, or if you're still serving, you're obviously put back in your duties. Mm-hmm. And then obviously from there, it's just a case of applications, trials, and that sort of stuff. But they've brought in now the Adaptive Sports Program, which is more about getting people into sport in a non-competitive environment.
Yeah.
So just taking that step out of straight into a competitive environment to easing back into sport. And obviously, Invictus Games is just your pinnacle, you could say, of your rehab.
Yeah.
No, it's good. It's really good. So we had a couple of trials in Townsville. We do some time with AIS in Canberra.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few just around Australia for different sports. So it's good. It's good fun.
You going to do it again? Is there like a limit to the amount of time? What are you doing?
I'm just limited it to two.
Okay.
So you can only compete in two.
Yeah.
Which is good. You get a nice turnover of people. You don't get sort of people doing seven or eight in a row. To move on with your rehab, whether it be taking the next step into coaching or you feel confident in the sport you're participating in to continue to do it further on.
Yeah, fair enough.
So that was a rule that was brought in this year. There's a fair few coaches who are still serving, I believe they are, and then there's a couple that have moved on from the military.
There's quite a few still serving members as well that compete in them as well.
Yeah.
And that's, they've still got service-related injuries. They might be transitioning out, but they're still actually employed. Yeah. So they still get the opportunity to go as well.
Yeah. And so, I figured you're both medically, what did you call it? Separated? Medically separated? Medically?
Medically discharged, medically separated, whichever word you prefer to use.
Is that something, like, is that a difficult, we normally tell people before we start, if there's anything you don't want to talk about, tell us beforehand and we won't bring it up, but we didn't do that. So if we bring up something you don't want to talk about, just tell them to shut up. But is that something that's difficult? Like how's that affected you, I guess?
I think it's different for everyone who's medically separating.
Yeah.
Injuries, you may be more easier to sort of digest, I guess you could say. The military is a very unique life to live.
Yeah.
Everything's structured. You know, you don't need to worry about what you're doing tomorrow or what time you're getting up because you know.
Yeah.
And if you're not awake, well, then you'll be told to get up.
Yeah.
Which is quite a life you can become accustomed to quite quickly. And then obviously, so throughout mine was an eye, a visual issue, and a brain injury. So mine obviously can't be seen by the wider public, really.
Yeah.
So it was really hard for me to digest as a, you know, an egotistical alpha male that to be told that you're no longer suitable for your job.
Yeah.
It was as hard as a pill to swallow. It's probably taken 3 or 4 years to digest. But then it's just a case of, you know, accepting your injuries and then moving on from there. I don't know how you found it.
Yes, loss of identity as well. Like a lot of guys find that the hardest thing.
Transitioning. Mm. You go from doing your job every day, highest level overseas and all that. You come back and you're told you're no longer suitable. So you go from work one day
to
nothing the next. So
yeah.
Losing that identity and self-worth is like the biggest killer among veterans. And obviously veteran suicide's just massive at the moment.
Yeah.
I think it's just the assimilation back into society. So when you first begin, most jobs, you've got about anywhere from sort of 4 months to, 2 years, 2.5 years to when you're serving. So you're sort of militarized for that long. And then the separation process, which is slowly being worked on. When I was separating, it was one day you're in doing a job to next day you're out. So your adjustment disorder and that sort of stuff slowly starts to creep in. So the next day I got home, I didn't have to get out of bed at 6 o'clock. So you just stay in bed, and what Luke said, you know, that sort of rolls into one thing, a few issues, self-worth. A lot of boys turn to, and females I should say, turn to drugs or prescription meds or something like that just to ease what's going on. But the understanding behind how it all works and that is just quite hard.
Yeah, which I suppose is a big part. Well, it's what would have made it easy and hard, I guess, for you when you came out is all of a sudden you've at least you had that something to put that focus into, I guess, which would have helped with Heroes on the Home Front.
Yeah, yeah, and that's really been my saving grace, I guess, is having that to sort of keep my mind occupied, but stay in the community that I worked with for so many years and building those relationships with my mates. Because another thing you don't remember, well, you don't think of when you get out of the army, you lose your job the next day and you no longer go back. But all your mates are
the people that you were working with.
And you can't actually go to their workplace and see them because it's a secure facility.
Yeah, you can't just, well, especially if they're deployed or whatever, you can't just, you know, pop over to Iraq.
And then they move every 3 years. So, like, we were down here in Adelaide for two and a half years, they moved our brigade down or our regiment down, and then they decided to move back up to Darwin. So single one of my mates that was living in Adelaide that I served with has gone back up to Darwin.
Yeah.
And we actually don't have a footprint of any of my friends here in Adelaide.
Yeah, right.
Unless they got out. And Benny. He's more of a work colleague.
An associate.
An acquaintance.
Yeah.
He just sponges all my money and funds.
And that was the biggest thing I think I found is you go from essentially hanging out with, you know, your best mates every single day and like anywhere from 10 to 70 of them, blokes who have got your back no matter what, regardless of whether you're, a good bloke or a shit bloke. At the end of the day, the job is to protect each other and make sure everyone comes home.
Yeah.
So, and then obviously you get out and the general sort of gist you get is a lot of people are out for themselves, their jobs, their families and that sort of stuff.
It's very, very cutthroat world.
Yeah.
Go on.
How do you find that? Because I know that was something that I noticed the first time I went to like overseas to like Thailand or something like that, which is basically there's no rules. Like, you've got to look after yourself. And that tends to foster more a community, people looking after each other, but it also tends to foster less fucking idiots, I suppose. Yeah. There's immediate consequences for you being an idiot. Like you can't just kind of get away with it like you do in our society. I imagine it's probably very similar to that when there's guns and weapons and whatnot involved as well. Do you guys notice that? Like did you struggle trying to assimilate into regular jobs, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, I think it's more just the respect you have within the role. The mutual respect is always there. But like I said, if you step out of line left or right, you're brought back within immediately. In a fair few different ways. Whereas outside in civilian world, it's just a bit harder because there is no really correction for people. They are who they are. Whereas obviously the discipline and stuff from the military life, we translate it back out. But, the respect, the way you speak to people, how you address people, tone, all that sort of stuff that we took for granted, I guess you could say, when you're serving, disappears.
Yeah, yeah.
You hear a lot of veterans like walking the streets, and if you hear someone like driving or something, and then you see them there, I hate people.
Yeah.
You probably know they're 90% of the time they're a veteran.
Yeah.
Because they hate people, because people are so, you can't fix stupid.
Yeah.
Oh. And that's one of the biggest things in the army. If someone stuffs up, there's 20 guys that are going to barrel them until they get it right.
Yeah.
Because it's affecting them.
Because it's because it's real consequences.
There's consequences, yeah. Whereas you come out into the city world and like you might be half an hour late.
Fuck. Yeah. I was waiting for
Oh, that's my favourite. And people take direct offence to that because they were there on time.
Yeah, I can imagine that in hypothetically that would.
Look, 5 minutes before.
No, there's not hypothetically. It pisses me off.
Favourite podcast. Next time I'm just going to be late.
That's a lot better.
It is for me, because then I can just be like, yeah, okay, I was wrong. I was late. I'm sorry.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
You know what?
I changed the date. I'm sorry, would have gone a long way too. I changed the time.
What do you mean?
He wants an apology.
I changed the time of the podcast. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, good. Thank you for appreciating my time.
But you actually didn't even let Matt know that you changed the time.
Yeah, I did. I messaged Matt because I needed to make sure that I wasn't going to impact the rest of his day by asking you guys to come half an hour later.
You were going to impact the rest of my day. It's just whether it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, you're definitely impacting other people by changing pre-agreed upon. It's just not that big of a deal for me because I don't have anything else to do.
I checked with everybody.
Now I'm just picking on you.
It's fine. Yeah,
everyone's picking on me. Fuck you.
Sorry, we derailed a very serious conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Ben keeps asking me to do a podcast with him. I do a podcast and everyone just picks on me.
Yeah, Ben's like that. He likes the limelight.
Yeah, just give me an hour to talk shit and hang shit on you.
Yeah, great.
Mr. Bathtub Maker.
I actually said that to someone the other day. I was doing tastings in a gym and they were like, oh, so where do you make it? On my bathtub. And they were like, pardon? I'm just like,
no. It's in my laboratory.
Yes.
Oh, no, I've got a fucking bathtub on the moon. What do you think I'm making?
Oh, it does make me laugh. Anyway, sorry.
We digress.
Yeah, we derail ourselves a lot.
No, but I think it's more like, you know, you go to the shopping centre and people bump into you or, you know, for little things like for myself, I find quite hard to just stay settled and comprehend.
Yeah.
You know, there's...
Do people bump into you?
Yeah, it's quite off-putting.
I know, yeah. I have a conversation with James about it where it's I feel like shopping centres in particular would be a lot better if you had like a one leg kick policy.
Yeah. We think society as a whole would be better with it. Yeah.
If you get inconvenienced, you get kicked in the leg. Like it's not going to kill you.
But it's almost like natural selection, but a shin kick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if you see people hobbling around a little bit on one leg, you're like, well, that person's a bit of a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
If shit goes down, stay away from that person.
Up. Yeah. Yeah. But what's the second step?
The second step is a bullet.
Escalation of forces.
Yeah. that one might be a bit extreme. So we'll start with the one step policy and then see how that goes for a bit.
Yeah.
Well, what's the rules on kicking a kid though?
You kick the parent.
Kick the parent?
If they're under eight, kick the parent.
Under eight.
If they're over eight, kick the kid. Just gently though.
Yeah. It was like a foot stamp or something.
Yeah, stamp on their toe.
Or pinch them.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's illegal in six states.
Yeah. I wouldn't be pinching kids. It doesn't even sound good.
No, not their bums.
Okay. That was the first thing I was going to do as well, I guess.
Good. Lucky. Thanks for clarifying.
I think we've spoken about it before. When we were little, Dad would grab your arm like that. If we were being an asshole in the shops or whatever, we were sweaty.
Your dad would do it, not a stranger.
Yeah. Well.
See where you went wrong?
Do we want to talk about your dad touching you?
Where did Dad pinch you?
Show me on this doll where Dad touched you.
Show me on the sex doll potentially real person on Instagram.
/ CPU driven.
Silicon
sack.
Yeah. He used to, like, he'd grab you by the arm. Like, you'd be an asshole. He'd grab you by the arm and you'd be like, he'd be just, stop doing that. And eventually it'd be like, Dad, that hurts. He's like, yep, stop doing that. And it's like, I'll stop doing that. Yeah, but
consequences.
Kick the parent, and then if the parent tried to kick you back, bullet.
Or do you swap their trolleys for the one with the wobbly wheels?
Oh, that's probably going to get us on. That's going to get more people on board.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just there should be some consequences.
You can remove one tire from their trolley. They have to balance it. Or you just remove two, like opposite angle ones, so that.
Yeah, it'd be, and yeah, but then they'd probably walk into you even more because they were fucking retarded and they couldn't.
So then they get kicked.
So they have certain rules for certain shops. Like if you're in the shopping, like you're in a supermarket like Woolies,
yeah.
If you stop off in Woolies, do they just refuse to give you carry bags? So you have to carry
everything. Oh, yeah. I like this.
I believe there's a shop called Audi that does that.
Yeah.
No, you just have to pay for
it. You just have to pay for it. But then if you go into a clothes store, do they like take your old clothes and then only let you have the new ones?
Oh.
Then you have to buy more clothes.
Exactly. Punishment. So there's consequences.
That's what it is. It needs to be consequences.
Yeah. Well, you and Dylan were talking about it the other week. Like people, people need to have more accountability. Like more people need to be punched in the face, I think was the way he put it.
They just need to cull up stupid people.
Well, I don't know about that.
I'm pretty sure.
I like Ben.
He's got a brain injury though, so it's diagnosed.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So it's not.
I'm not in control. So. Yeah.
Got to take baby steps. I find, like, I think it would help a lot, particularly for young men. It's more young men that tend to be egotistical and not understanding things. But I find, like, martial arts particular, because it gives you at least an awareness that there are immediate consequences.
Yeah.
Because if you fuck up, you get punched. You fuck up, you get choked. Like, yeah.
You know that, don't you?
Yeah. What? Yeah, yeah. I've been punched. I've been punched and choked so many times.
But there's been debate about this in the military as well. Like, in our background, like, all these kids and juveniles that are playing up on the streets should be forced to
go do mandatory service,
but then you're just giving stupid people the license with a gun, and the repercussions of that are probably not going to be worth it.
What about if they had like year service but it didn't have to be like active, like you could be the clerk or work in the
like they have to participate in the reserves.
Yeah, you've got to do government service, it might not necessarily be military.
Yeah, don't they still do that in like I want to say
a lot of countries, a lot of countries have mandatory service, yeah.
But I mean, it could only be, you know, 4 or 5 months. Don't have to be a full year of service, but within 4 months, we're going to militarize you, you're going to insert some discipline and that sort of stuff.
That would have been fantastic.
Any young kid under 18 years old has to go to Kapuka for 12 weeks and just be absolutely
sucked
in. It'd work, but
I feel like it would get out of hand real quick because that's the problem. Like, I reckon you'd run out of good
leaders
or people, before you ran out of people that needed leadership. So then it would work in a small scale and then eventually they would just fuck it up. And you'd be sending someone to a hell for 12 weeks. It doesn't help them.
Yeah. No, but if you develop the reputation for rehabilitating kids in a professional environment, it would deter people from fucking up because they hear what it's like.
Yeah.
I guess. Do you guys have much to do with cadets at all?
No.
Maybe that's another thing. Maybe you guys can start this organization.
I was just thinking that then. I'm like, why?
There is a place in New South Wales, a guy that I served with, Troy Methurst, shout out. They started the veterans mentoring camps for young kids.
Yeah.
And they do exactly that. They take young kids that are undisciplined.
Fucking up.
That their parents actually send them there. Like, they might be on their phones all the time or playing up at school. And their parents
it's like boarding school.
Yeah, you're going to summer camp with these military guys.
Yeah.
And they make their beds and they send them through, like, a military. I think it's like a weekend or a 2-week course or something.
They
go out to a camp and they learn everything military, marching, food, eat when they're told and do that.
Yeah.
Nothing like out of control, beasting them and stuff, but just gives them that discipline and no phones, no social media, none of that. Mm.
Yeah.
But it'd be great. Like, my wife works in Families SA and she's constantly got, they're called guardianships of the government kids, like GOM kids.
Yeah.
And they're all like criminals, their parents are drug addicts.
Yeah, that's the problem.
All that kind of stuff. And I've said to her multiple times, well, like, the government should introduce a veterans mentoring program that grabs these kids that are all under 18 and pairs them with a veteran that's non-serving or even serving that has a couple of hours a day that can mentor these kids and just hang out with them and just give them a bit of perspective on life.
Yeah.
And even if it doesn't do much for the kid, like, the help that it would give the veteran if the government funded it and paid the veteran for their time.
Yeah.
So a veteran like Ben and I, who are both on military pensions for our injuries, it just gives us a bit more inspiration to better the community and be part of it. If we just go and spend 6 hours a week with a 16-year-old that keeps getting suspended from school.
Yeah. You can go to juvie or you can go rock up to these mentoring sessions.
Go hang out with this dude and have a chat to him. There are a few, like, they're not government. Oh, I'm sure there is funding. I looked into it a little while ago. There's one, like, the Sammy D Foundation
Yeah, and that's domestic violence.
Yeah, they do a lot of stuff with, well, with all sorts of kids, like basically just kids. I think at-risk youths is what they call them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they do the same thing. It's like, yeah, not much time. They give you fuel money and stuff, and you basically just go hang out with an at-risk kid. But that got started through, because my sister went to school with Sam, and he was one of the one of the first sort of publicly
one-hit
kill kids.
Yeah.
So, yeah, his parents started up the foundation when that happened, and it's grown and grown. Like, they do all sorts of stuff now. They've got a bus. They go, it's a bit like,
it's on the corner of South and Dawes Road.
They go to, like, schoolies. They've got a, like, they're pretty engaged and active within the community.
It'd be great to see more of those sort of things around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, knowing from, like, we didn't start as Heroes on the Home Front. We come under another charity.
Yeah.
Called Hearts for Heroes, which is run and directed by Corporal Scott Smith's sister, Roxanne. And Scott was killed in 2012 in Afghanistan. So she sort of started that up. But to start a charity or a non-for-profit is a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of them squabbling for money that they don't need, but they just, because it's accessible, they'll put in for it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you get multi-billion-dollar or million-dollar companies or non-for-profits here in South Australia that spend millions of dollars on wages, and the money that actually raise doesn't actually filter down to the people
that to need it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you get one that I know of, I think they were about $4.3 million they get in fundraising a year annually is probably their average, but that's what they got in, I think, 2016, 2017. $2.2 million of that was spent on wages.
Yeah.
I think it was like $90,000 that got back to the actual issues for that year.
Yeah, right.
Like it's outrageous.
There's a real argument, and granted, I'm getting all my information from a 10-minute TED talk, but there was a real argument for like for-profit charities.
Yeah.
Where that's essentially they were saying that if you had a charity that was actually trying to make a profit, you might still be paying overhead in wages. But because you're making a profit, the people doing those jobs wouldn't be volunteers. They might actually be experts at marketing or experts at that. Because I think that's where it starts to fall down as well, is when you're spending all this money on wages and it's, you know, it might not actually be that much money to that person.
Yeah.
But because you're paying 100 people to do 20 people's worth of work.
Yeah.
Because it's
volunteer. Yeah.
You can get to work on a Sunday for $2 or for, or pay for your petrol and stuff like that. And you're like, well, is that the best use of time and money?
Yeah.
No, not at all. Like, if you're going to be a charity and set it up, like, I understand. If you're a charity and you're bringing in $10 million a year, the average charity, the rule, apparently, not too sure, but the rule I've heard is if you're a director or a CEO of a charity, you take 10% of what the charity brings in.
Yeah.
Right? So that's, like, a fair wage.
Yeah.
Because you're obviously doing it for the love of it, and so you take a small portion when you can afford to. But yeah, buying big buildings and marketing and spending all the money to build the brand up isn't actually helping the individuals that it's designed to.
Yeah.
And when you bring in like expert marketers and all these extra people that have the top of their game that require high paying salaries or they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
It just like digresses where the charity's actually heart lies, I guess.
Well, that was like that 300-something million that the government gave to veterans.
Yeah.
And it filtered down to, I think it was $15 per veteran. That was what the end state was going to be that the veteran would get.
There's a big thing at the moment about veterans getting a new ID card for concessions and discounts at Woolies and stuff. That's going to cost $11 million to roll out to all the veterans in Australia that are post-serving or still serving with injuries on these white, gold or orange cards.
Mm.
The white, gold and orange cards already exist. But because the government's promised that this is a new card, and all they've really changed is instead of it being a DVA healthcare card, it's now a veterans card.
Mm.
But it's $11 million wasted. Mm. I mean, that $11 million, yes, it probably wouldn't put a lot of money in the individual's pocket, but you could spend $1 million on a great national marketing campaign that'd get the same point across about the existing cards and then spend the rest of the money on grassroots problems like the young veterans mentoring camps or something like that. That's actually beneficial to the youth coming through that are obviously not conforming or being millennials.
It's a good way to fix two problems.
Yeah.
Like it's a good way to take two problems and actually use them to fix each other instead of trying to, like, put a Band-Aid over one and put a Band-Aid over the other one. It's like, okay, well, here's people that want to give back to the community and are frustrated because they because they're struggling to do that, and here's people that need leadership from people like these people. Like, yeah, let's just fucking put them in a room together.
But even like those cards, they, you know, personally, I wouldn't display it at all because you don't do it for the gratification of what you've done, or you're seeking some sort of, you know,
attention.
Recognition. Yeah.
I mean, the same thing happened with the flights. They said if you come up and tell us you're a veteran, you'll get first seating on the plane, or you better go on first to the plane.
Yeah, and you'll be acknowledged on the plane.
Yeah, I mean, 95% of veterans don't want that. Yeah. We don't do it because I want everyone to think that I'm some hero.
And, and 90% of the veterans want to get on the plane last because they don't like flying.
And who wants to? Don't get me started on fucking people that line up to get on aeroplanes. The same people. It never made any sense to me. I will always, like, I'll go to the gate and I'll sit there and wait for everyone else to get, like, all you're going to do is get in the line and stand there and wait and wait, and people bump you and people get in your way. Yeah. Like, I let everybody get on and then I just walk on, get
but
in
what
the
if
seat.
They say rows 1 to 16 go on first and you're row 15?
I just let everybody else get on, and then I get on the end of the line. And
you're on it less. You're not going to get served drinks any faster.
You're not going to land any faster.
It's like, it's like the people that went, as soon as they land, everyone, you can hear people unclicking their seatbelts. It's like, we're taxiing. The doors aren't even, like, where are you, like, where rushing to get? Yeah. Like, then the plane stops and people stand up. Launch and it's up. Like, all right.
What about plane etiquette as well? That's one of my, there's certain things that aren't that big of a deal, but I really care about them because they're just, it's just rude. I'm like, so the plane etiquette being like, you know, you basically go out in order. And there's always those people that they're those people. They've been standing up for 10 minutes.
They've already got their luggage and they're standing in front of you like, well, hang on, I'll go out next, mate. Yeah.
And then you see the people that try and sneak through and you're just like, nah.
I'll just sit, because I usually sit in the aisle. I don't like sitting by the window because for some reason, in my head, if I need to get out, I can get out in the aisle seat real quick. Don't know where I'm going to go.
That makes sense when you drop from, you know, 20,000.
hey, man, I've been skydiving.
You've got access to the toilet whenever you need it.
Yeah.
Think about that one.
And it doesn't really bother, like, people climb, like, I sleep through pretty much anything. So if people are climbing
like
over me.
Appointments.
If you're listening, ladies.
But yeah, so I just sit and let everyone else get off.
Interesting.
And get off the
devious
airplane.
Man.
Perfect. You know, once the door's open, I'm pretty keen to get off the fucking plane.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. I'm not that chill.
Just done. Yeah.
There's a
I tell you about what happened on my way back? Have I told you about this? I think I did.
Probably.
Yeah.
I haven't heard
the story.
No, Matt, basically, we summed it up as I'm a racist. But we got on the plane. And again,
we don't need to hear this story now.
We're in, I feel like, Dubai somewhere on our way back from the funeral last year. And I'd lined up, walked in, I was flying by myself. And like I said, I don't really care. As long as I got the aisle seat, I'm not bothered. And I'd selected my aisle seat. And there was this lady standing in front of me, like real, like quiet. We were just lining up, moving along as you do. Got there and I wasn't really paying much attention. But there was obviously something going on because everyone had sat down except this lady. There was another man, like... There was something going on and I was half drunk and oblivious and just sort of standing there.
Justified.
And the air hostess was like up and down, doing something. And I got to the point where I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? And eventually the air hostess comes over to me and she's like, oh, excuse me, sir. Can you switch seats? And I was like,
Depends. Where am I going to sit? Am I moving from a prime position to a middle seat?
I literally just said as long as it's an aisle seat, like, then yeah, I don't mind. And she was like, this lady can't sit next to a man, so we need to move her to sit next to another female. I'm like,
bad luck.
That's no issue with that. As long as I'm sitting in an aisle seat, I don't mind. And she's like, oh, this lady's sitting in, like, the middle of there. And I'm like, no. And everyone was looking at me like, oh, you know, I'm the bad guy. And I'm like, I've got no issue. If you've got that issue, put it on your thing. Like, when you check in, it's got special conditions. I'd chuck that in the special conditions.
Yeah,
or
pick your seat.
Yeah, pick your seat. Then, yeah, the ladies looked at me like, oh, but she, because of her religion, she can't sit next to a man. I'm like, again, I've got no issue with moving so this lady can sit next to a lady. I would just like to sit in an aisle seat. And then eventually some like random dude from further down said, oh, he goes, what if you sit in my seat and I'll sit in the middle seat? I'm like, done, easy. And then everyone was all happy about it. I forgot how I even got onto this rant. I'd forgotten that this even happened. But this was, again,
I don't feel like I've heard this.
Really? No. Maybe I told someone and they told me I was racist or sexist or something. Apparently, I was the bad guy.
I'd say that was justified.
I probably would have acted the same. I can see how there are steps you could have taken to have avoided that situation. I would have probably done the same thing.
Unless you were half cut and the story's actually a bit different.
Yeah.
No, because this was, I'd been on I was sober at this point. Tired,
but sober.
You just said
before you were drunk.
I'd had a couple.
I was sober for an alcoholic.
Yeah. No, just to be on the safe side, I'm going to side with the airline.
I had my shirt off. James, I was yelling.
James is the racist. Yes. Yeah.
He wasn't actually on a plane yet.
He was in a taxi.
He was in someone else's taxi and he couldn't get out.
Yeah. Well, that's not even.
And
right.
He was in London. He wasn't in Dubai. I don't know what he's talking about Dubai. It was his sister that wouldn't sit next to him.
Oh, shit. Anyway, I digress.
I don't know how we got from talking about a veterans charity to you
flying back from Dubai.
Yeah.
I don't think I went to Dubai. I know. Where does
it go? It was with the Virgin letting veterans on.
Oh, yeah.
Letting veterans on airplanes.
So
yeah.
Justified.
So that is what... So they offer you to be able to be seated first and what get a clap.
And they, yeah. And they, yeah, they'll, they'll acknowledge you on the plane.
Yeah.
And like...
Not the clap. Not again.
I am... Like, obviously, you guys have... I don't know if you've met Prince, my assistant's dog.
Yes.
Obviously, it's too hot for him to
come. Yeah, I'm going to stop organising things with you on hot days.
Hot days, yeah. He's got rules and regulations.
This is the second time I've
seen
you. He's
got better conditions than I do.
Yeah. It's too hot. I was going to say, what are you talking about? You don't go out of the house most of the time, regardless of temperature.
But yeah, like we board the plane first just because it's ease of access for everybody else.
That makes sense. Like, yeah. If there's practical reasons for something,
yeah.
Plus, you got a dog. Like, I'd be okay with getting on the plane first if I had a dog.
I pretty much anyone who's got a dog, they can kind of do whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah,
really care.
It is good because we get like drinks first, we get food first because we sit right up the front.
Yeah,
But like, it's still like as a veteran and having that
everyone's staring
at you. Like, why? And then every single person comes on the plane after me and they go, lovely dog, beautiful dog, what's he for?
Yeah.
Can we pat him? Is he working? Like 300 people.
Yeah.
And it gets really, really old. So
People pat him?
If they ask and I'm okay with them to pat him, I don't want everyone patting my dog. But
yeah. So if it's a good looking bird, she can pat the dog, anyone else can fuck off.
I don't think my wife listens to this, but yeah.
Yeah, darling, if you're listening, no, I never let young, attractive
only
women.
Only older gentlemen.
Yeah, ask Will how my wife doesn't listen to this podcast, but for him.
Yeah.
He got home. We hadn't even released it yet, and he was already in trouble.
We were in trouble.
He was already in trouble.
He just knew he was hanging out with you guys.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
You obviously done something. You would have fucked up.
Yeah. You're in trouble.
You're in the dog
house. Outside.
Oh.
But yeah, no veteran wants to get on a plane and be acknowledged by every single person that walks on. You're just going to get on the plane last, put your headphones in.
I wouldn't have thought anyone, like, unless you're a completely egotistical. Like, I don't think anybody would want that.
I guess business people maybe that fly all the time, they might just want to get on, get their work started on their laptop or whatever.
Yeah.
And then like either sleep if they travel early every day and they're sick of travelling. But
But I mean, even on that, it's, you know, obviously people that we come across, you know, at the Olympic Games, for example, every person or school that came, they wanted to thank you for what you've done and that sort of stuff. And it's almost, it's hard to sort of take.
Yeah.
Like, it's not embarrassing by any means. Like, I'm super proud of what we did, but you almost don't want it.
Yeah.
And when someone says it, because we never hear it, it's almost like, it's just a job. Like for us, it's just like, you know, builders, they go to work and do their job.
Yeah.
People just happen to be police enough and say, thanks for doing your job.
Yeah.
They get abused.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, we go there, we go to work, and it's simply a job. It's just a really cool job.
Yeah.
And then you go home. It's the same as anything else.
Imagine it would be hard, because one of the main things you guys said was, like, the self-identity after you're out as well. So imagine constantly being reminded.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest things. You know, people ask, you know, what did you do?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, my biggest issue was, so my job was a grunt in the infantry.
Yeah.
My biggest thing I'm still not settling with is I never got to deploy.
Yeah.
So essentially, like, I trained for 3.5 years to play footy.
Yeah.
And never got to play a game.
Yeah.
So I never actually got to execute my job in a real-time environment. So that's something that I've never been able to settle with, and I probably never will.
Yeah.
But obviously every question that I get asked is, oh, did you go overseas?
Yeah.
And you always have to sit there and say, look, no, I didn't get the opportunity.
Yeah.
And I did everything in my power to go over, but it was just wrong place, wrong time. The battalion was starting up an amphibious element, so
yeah,
we were stuck on ships and boats. That was what I found to be the hardest when you're reminded of your service.
Yeah.
I think the hardest thing, like the other question you get all the time is, oh, did you love it? Would you do it again? And like most of us guys that get out, either medically or whatever, 100% we'd get back in. Like if I could go back into the army tomorrow in the same role or a similar role, or yeah, even that, like, because we came out of army, we can't even enlist in the army, the Navy or the Air Force. Like,
yeah.
Because it's the whole Defence Force.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'd go straight back in and be an Air Force officer, like 100%. Like just to be around the boys and the comradeship and your mates and your friends, the families, everything that you have in the army and Defence Force is not like a normal civilian job.
Yeah.
Like, but my wife asks me, you know, quite often, would you go back through again everything that happened and your injuries and getting medically separated and that? Well, I would do the exact same thing again for 4 years.
Yeah.
Still receive the same injuries.
Yeah.
Because of those 4 years that you get.
Yeah.
Because that was the model the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So it sounds odd to some people. Nah, why would you do it again and receive your injuries? But it's just what you do.
Yeah, because you value what you got, you value even with the negatives.
Yeah.
The positives will outweigh the negatives.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know if Ben's told you guys, like, I actually died overseas.
Really?
Like when I was in Afghanistan, like just the tempo, the stress and being in command of like a small group of troops, it just wears you down. It's 24 hours a day. Like everything happens overseas and it happens quick. My heart just gave up and I just collapsed and died.
Probably because you don't have a heart.
Yeah.
I like how you felt for your stomach. Like, yeah, I got a heart.
That's the way your heart is. That's your stomach.
That's just my subway.
Bro. That's because your wife owns your heart.
Yeah.
Oh, oh, there you go. Now listen to it. Now listen to it.
Cuddles.
Yeah. Yeah, but, yeah, fuck. Like, and even having all that happen, like, I wouldn't change it.
So it's like just exhaustion or like you have a predisposed?
They don't know. Like I was medically evacuated out of country.
Yeah.
To Bagram Airfield Base where they've got like the top, to where all the Green Berets, SAS, Commandos, everything is, that's their base.
Yeah.
So they have like full bird colonels that are like cardiovascular surgeons from America, like top of their game.
Yeah.
And that's where they all stay for obviously because they get much worse injuries than we do. Not than we do, but more regularly.
Yeah.
So they flew us out there to see, do stress tests and have heart scans and everything like that. They just couldn't tell me what was wrong. They couldn't tell me if it would happen again.
That's a fucking worry.
7 days later, I just went back to work.
Yeah.
So just thought, keep plugging along and
Get on with it.
Get on with it. But like, I wouldn't change it. I'd go back and do it again, for sure. Even if it was the same outcome.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that's got a lot to do with your mindset or how you look at, I don't know, how you weigh things up adversity. In your head as well. Yeah, like overcoming it. But like it's a lot of the people we meet and a lot of the people that I get along with, I seem to find have a similar, like however you justify it or however it sits in your head. Like I find that with a lot of people that you can look at. What are you looking at?
Oh, it's my watch. It's ringing. It's always ringing.
I don't have a watch.
Yeah. I run on James time.
Yeah, we
know. Which is just whenever, whatever.
Yeah, it's about half an hour after your watch.
As long as I'm inconveniencing someone, I'm on time.
what was I saying? Yeah, no, that like is the way you look at those things as well. It's like you'll meet some people that will keep looking at those things and going over and over and over and they'll sort of let it be their prison. And it's like, oh, like if I hadn't done this and I hadn't done that, then this wouldn't have happened. It's like, okay. Or you meet other people where you look back and you're like, fuck, that happened. That was shit. But like, that has gotten me to this point. So, like, if I was going to do it again, I would do the same thing. Like, I would do the same over again.
Yeah. It's interesting even just to comment that you would do it again.
Like, yeah.
I saw this thing the other day. It was, it said if you could go back to your 10-year-old self and basically have your own knowledge, but you get started again from 10, would you do it? And I was like, I was looking at some of the comments on this thing and everyone was like, yeah. And I was thinking, I don't know if I would. Like, On face value, that sounds great. Like, you know, I get to basically get another 20 years at least and do some things a bit differently. But I'm like,
are you 30?
I'm 32 in a month.
Yeah, aging gracefully.
Baby face, I know.
I'll give you that.
I'm keeping the looks of the department.
I'm like old mate.
What are you fucking talking about?
Yeah, but you look like you got moisturizer. This looks put together. This looks natural.
Yeah.
I wake up like this. I wake up and piss up excellence. Brilliant.
You're like you've got a Samsung filter on you.
Yeah. You're like Barney Stinson. I don't even take a bad photo of my man.
I'm like, it's interesting because I'm like, I might be a completely different person if I had not lived the life that I did from 10 onwards. And it sounds like you guys were saying something similar, and it ties into what you were saying. I think that's a mindset thing. I think that mindset aligns itself to, nah, fuck it. Like, you know, I learned from this. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep going down this path and keep getting better, opposed to if and but.
Yeah, if only I hadn't, or if only this hadn't. Yeah. So, well, I fucking did. So, yeah.
I mean, for example, like, I met my wife around the time of the injury. So, you know, if I hadn't served, you know, I wouldn't have met her.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a lot of positive things that come out of it. Obviously, you know, the amount of things you become diagnosed with after traumatic injuries, you know, your depression, your anxiety, your anger management, adjustment disorders.
Alcoholism.
Yeah, alcoholism, drugs, that sort of stuff is something you battle with each day. And obviously, you know, we see a lot of veterans who think that, unfortunately, taking their life is the best option.
Yeah.
Obviously, you become burdens and stuff like that. So, going back to November?
Yeah.
Something like that. I pretty much run myself into the ground trying to work just to sustain some money for us.
Because
I took a pay cut of 40 grand once I discharged. And then I just kept going. Ended up in hospital for pretty much, well, you come and visit, Matt didn't. for a fair while.
I would have had to leave the house.
Yeah. He would have been there on time, though.
I'll send you a photo.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, that all filters down to essentially why the charity was developed. You know, my wife's been through hell purely because of my injuries and what I'm suffering post-service. You know, I'm 5 years post-injury. And still to this day, I'm pretty fucking cooked. But, yeah, and that's obviously looking after the families who help hold it together.
Yeah.
You know.
I just like the warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah.
Feelings? What are they?
Exactly. What now?
Cold-blooded.
You're making fun of him for not having a heart.
Yeah.
Do you find that sport, like, that kind of ties back to the sports stuff, is, like, the way you guys were describing the military before is, like, a good, I'm thinking of good sports clubs I've been part of, like martial arts stuff. It's almost like a lesser, you're not around them all the time, but it's that kind of thing where you are looking after each other. Is that why the sports stuff kind of helps? Or
I think obviously fitness is a big part of defense. Like what you do in the defense force, regardless if you're a clerk all the way through to, you know, high performing SF operators. It's everyone has some sort of aspect of being fit.
Yeah.
But obviously, once you're removed from that area, the fitness is quite relevant towards your mental health as well.
Yeah.
It gives you some purpose and drive to get out of bed, which is why I think it was developed.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm training for a specific event, if I don't do it, it's only going to punish me ultimately.
Yeah.
So I've got to get out and do something. Me personally, I was playing SANFL the year before I served.
Yeah.
But then obviously me realising that I'm not going to get back to that level was a shock to the system too. So I just play, you know, as high as I can.
Yeah.
It was massive for me when I got out as well because I didn't train for a while and just ended up down the shit can.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, it leads into, like, depression and stuff as well, though. Like, you train every day in the army, every morning, 7:30 to about 9:30 you train.
Yeah.
You go and do PT. It might be a game of touch footy. It might be a long, slow distance run or a battle PT course. You get out of the army, that's no longer on your to-do list. You're like, well, I don't have to train today. Then you start getting overweight. Your diet suffers because you can eat what you want because you're not limited to what you've got on base. So then you become unfit and unhealthy and then you become unhappy with yourself.
Yeah.
Which it's then a vicious like, cycle. Yeah, it just spirals out of control. So then you shut the curtains, you sit on the couch and you drink. And then drinking obviously... drinking obviously starts getting a little bit old and you have to drink more and more and more. And then you turn to your prescription medications. I mean, I was in hospital 2 times last year just for alcohol and drug abuse. And it was only like the charity and having good supportive people around me that got me back onto the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
And now focusing all my energy and getting back into the gym. Like I got back into Fast Twitch Gym with Ben and doing an eight-week course that we were designing specifically for veterans that are driven. Yeah. Massively helped mental health because it gave me the purpose to get up. I was accountable to be there as well.
Yeah.
So I had to be there because I wasn't playing. So if I wasn't there, I wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
So it's much like the army. You don't go, you don't pay, or work. You don't go, you don't get paid, sort of thing. So I had to be there. I had to train. I was pushed. I was pretty well broken some days and and built back up.
Yeah.
But it built resilience and then got me back into a healthy mindset of like, well, I've trained today, so I'm going to eat healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no point
in I'm not going to drink tonight. And then, because I've got to train again tomorrow.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So mental health and fitness and all that kind of stuff. And having that identity to be where you were when you left the Defence Force is massive.
Mm. That's also relevant to civilian society as well. You know, mental health is obviously linked with not being fit, but actively doing something.
Yeah.
You know, it's
walking the dogs good enough for most people.
Yeah. You get out of bed and you just do something. It clears your mind or that sort of, whatever you take away from it. So it's not only limited to veterans and that sort of stuff, which is what we're trying to develop. That link back to society is, yes, we are our own entity and we're quite special individuals. I mean, some blokes get out and have no issues at all.
Yeah.
They're perfectly fine. They did the service, you know, and they moved on.
Yeah.
A lot of people go into sort of policing or fireys or, you know, there's those high-performing roles again because that's what they're accustomed to.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it is relevant massively to anyone and everyone. So we obviously pride ourselves on it because we do it every single day, where someone might say, I'll go to the gym 3 times a week.
Yeah.
But, you know, but also the PT or, you know, the training that we did was unique.
Yeah.
You know, you go and do a pack march with a 30-kilo pack on for 10 Ks.
Mm-hmm.
You go and do that in the street. One bloke did it in the street and got locked up.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. They thought he was a terrorist.
Yeah. He was walking along in his army gear with a pack on and it was a metal bar.
Metal bar.
Yeah. It was a grey metal bar.
This is in America?
No, this is here. It was in Melbourne, I think.
They ended up calling, you know, a shit ton of cop cars.
And Starries.
Starries were going to go.
Got him at gunpoint.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And it was just a metal bar.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's quite hard. And he would have thought he was doing nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just trying to keep that routine.
Yeah. The metal bar. I feel like if he didn't have the metal, it would all, I feel like that's where what would have tipped someone over the edge. Like, if I saw a dude in full camo with a pack on walking over there, like, well, you go to Lofty and you see people doing it. But I can just imagine the, like an old person or someone in an office building, like looking out and seeing someone holding like a metal rod, and all of a sudden I can hear them like, oh my God, what's that person doing? Like for the most part, I just be like, okay, man, jog on, do whatever.
Yeah. We can understand the justification for it, but it's just so abnormal for us. So
For him, he's just like, that's routine.
Yeah, you
like,
go to Darwin or Townsville and everyone's doing it.
Yeah.
You go to Melbourne or Sydney and it's like out of the norm.
Mm.
So.
But I mean, we, like, another thing to touch on that we find, especially with people in a combat role, we're always told you neutralize the threat.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So a lot of the boys now, not a lot, I should say, a fair few boys get done for assault and things like that purely because escalation of force is what we're trained to
do. Yeah, you know, I get you.
Yeah.
Strike first, strike hard.
Yeah. Or the old, you know, you never bring a knife to a gunfight type situation. Yeah. But unfortunately, there's a couple of boys who have been convicted of murder and stuff like that because we're trained to neutralise the threat.
Yeah.
One of the boys' house got broken into.
Yeah.
So he acted upon that through his training.
Yeah.
And ultimately ended up killing the guy.
Yeah.
But his mindset was, well, he was a threat.
Yeah.
And the only way to neutralise it in my house was to make sure that they didn't get back up.
Hmm.
So if someone gets knocked out, he could pounce back up.
Yeah.
So it was one of those tricky things that, you know, we're still trying to help cater to and help the guys assimilate that's okay, but it's not sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's a really tricky one as well. I mean, a normal person would say, well, if someone comes into my house, they're not going to leave.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, we're trying to, I'm going to make sure you don't move.
Yeah.
And you're staying on the floor. So it's, yeah, it's an odd one to try and decipher.
Well, and it's nuanced as well, because there would be situations when that is the right response. Yeah. Like, depending on, and like, someone coming in your house, especially if, like, I've got a kid on the way, I've got my wife at home.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Like, I'm not going to be far off of that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I mean, my response isn't going to be much below that.
No.
And depending on who, like, if it's someone comes in armed or with a knife and they're acting crazy, it's like, well.
Yeah,
well,
equal or greater force is the law, apparently.
Yeah.
You're allowed to use. To either disarm or
But I imagine those laws are written by people that don't have a lot of any kind of combat experience or any kind of situation, because it's like it's all well and good to look on the outside and go, well, that person was going to throw a punch, so you're allowed to throw a punch back.
Yeah.
Whereas you're in the situation someone's trying to punch at your head, and then, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you just woke up with your wife and kids in the house. It's like, well, how are you supposed to assess that situation?
Yeah. And I mean, someone like yourself who has a big martial arts background.
Yeah.
You're held to a higher standard because you're trained at a bigger level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So once again, you can understand, yeah. but in the heat of the moment, favor. If someone's in front of me who's causing a threat,
yeah.
I'm not going to allow yeah. you to continue that threat.
Yeah. I'm not trained to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning because someone's broken in my house. Like that. I have never done any live simulation of that happening.
There's an idea. You can be late to 11:30 podcast at 3 in the morning.
No, thank you. I would not. Yeah, no, that wouldn't be fun. Yeah, but it is ridiculous, isn't it? Because the law would look at that and be like, oh, you've been trained, so you should be able to exert more reasonable force because you know what you're doing. It's like, I train to be able to neutralize the threat as quickly as possible and as effectively as possible. So if anything, you're better off getting Joe Blow off the street that doesn't know what he's doing, because it's a fair, like, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm not going to be like, oh, okay, I'm just going to gently put you down to the ground.
And I'm just going
to
try and detain you.
How much risk to my family am I supposed to accept?
Yeah.
Like, if it's 1% risk that this person beats me and gets my family, like, am I supposed to accept that? Or is it 10? Like, where's the line where, and like, I get both sides. I get why you don't want people just having free license because someone's coming in your house.
Yeah, everyone's got a gun.
Yeah. Like, it is difficult. Like, where is that line? And I can see how it would be even harder again if your experience is the likelihood of that going very wrong.
Yeah.
Is higher. Like, in situations you've been in your life, that person breaking into your house at night isn't trying to steal the silverware. They're trying to murder you and your friends. Yeah. I can imagine.
Veterans go to a worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Our mind is trained to.
Trying to cover worst the case. Worst case. And if it's any lesser, then it's sweet. Yourself. Yeah. But we're trained to be able to handle the worst situations.
Mm. They often get it in a training exercise. You'll be doing something and they'll be like, oh, your store's truck's run out of water or something and you've got to go and help. All right, we'll walk down there and get it. Oh, now the engine's on fire. What do you do?
Yeah.
Oh, we put it out. We'll get our ET shovels out and throw sand on it because we don't have fire extinguishers and put it out. Now it's fallen into a sinkhole. Like, they just continuously just throw, oh, now you're getting shot at the same time. Oh, you've just walked into an ambush. Like, you've got 4 casualties. Oh, the helicopters are grounded because of the smoke. Like, you've got to carry them out. Oh, but you've only got this to make it with a stretcher. Like, it just snowballs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, what risk do you take with your family?
Yeah.
And how much do you think?
Yeah, because if it's like, oh, well, the person came in and they didn't have a weapon, it's like, oh, I didn't know that. And then you killed him. It's like, but then the flip side of that is, okay, the person came in and did have a weapon and you didn't know they had a weapon, so you didn't do something and then you got stabbed. Like,
or you tried to use self-defense and got stabbed.
Yeah.
Mm. Or it's you drunk at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Getting on a plane from Dubai.
Yeah. Or he's like a drunk that's, you know, your next door neighbor's drunk. My house is exactly the same as my next door neighbor. He's walking in the wrong house. Like, you do have to have some. Yes, that's a fucking toughie.
Yeah. And I guess that's where, like...
Lock your doors, folks.
Yeah. James is creeping.
James's tips. Yeah. This is going to reflect another one flashing up on the screen. Yeah.
James's top tips.
Lock your house.
Yeah.
Oh. Do what I say, not what I do.
Yeah, your bucks show immediately. Like, it comes to mind.
Why were you late to that?
Hey? I wasn't late to it. I had to be emergency evacuated.
Oh, he was in charge of his own emergency evacuation. We'll fill you in the details later, but it involved hiding in a children's blow-up inflatable playground and then
falling asleep
away
in my car. Yeah. And stealing a stripper's suitcase.
That would have been interesting, taking back to the Ambos. It's not mine, I promise.
Yeah. What the hell is this?
Yeah, just don't touch Jamal.
Well, this one actually is mine.
Why is it vibrating? Anyway.
Yeah.
We've hit our hour mark. What's next for...
What's next for you boys?
What do you want to get people to do? Is there anything you want people to do?
Oh, just...
Got some exciting shit going on?
Yeah, we got lots of exciting stuff. We're off to Gold Coast with a sort of a... What do they call it? NEFL footy team.
Yeah, same as an SNFL footy team up in the Gold Coast to run a boot camp type session.
Yeah.
Expose the boys to sort of some younger contemporary veterans is the term that's been thrown around.
Contemporary?
Yeah. It's a finely dressed veteran.
They like lattes.
Avocado toast.
Yeah. So we're going up there to sort of expose them to younger fellas who are perfectly, you know, normal and they can associate with, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Share a few stories and see if we can make them defecate while running or something like that. So, yeah.
That's fun.
You are an asshole.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, how was footy training? Fucking. What did you say? AIDS. I hate running. I'm going to go up to Queensland and make people run till they shit themselves.
Yeah. fair few Bunnings barbecues, try and raise some funds for the charity, which then allows us to put on functions and stuff for families and that sort of stuff. So.
Got a big walk for veterans, 42Ks from Seacliff to
Semaphore,
Larks Bay, and then back to Henley Grange RSL.
So when?
In honour of 42 veterans killed.
When? When are you doing that?
So that's the 27th of July, last week in July.
So we'll just pen you boys into doing
it. Yeah,
sounds like you're just nice in, yeah.
I'm a serial walker.
Oh, it's easy for him to say. Like, I do like high intensity training. He's tailor made for a nice little walk.
There's a few
mate, look at these bad boys.
I have seen your stair walks. Yeah, so that's a big one that's coming up. And what's next?
AFL. So the Adelaide Oval have been really, really generous to us, and they give us a couple of boxes every year.
Yeah.
Whether it be a media box or a suite box.
Just for a safe place for veterans to go and watch footy.
Yeah.
So a lot of them, like, obviously, I got my dog and he can't sit in the grandstands or the crowds, and I don't like it either, and a lot of other veterans don't like, well, we hate people.
I get it, though. Like, it's a aggressive, loud, drunk environment.
Yeah, and it's quite confronting when you used to be so vigilant around everybody and everybody. It's a lot easier just to sit somewhere else and just enjoy it without having to.
But also expose people to crowds, because we want to get to the stage where that's no issue. This way we can do it in a safer environment. Obviously, we're in a locked, confined space. So if someone does have an episode or something, we can keep it in a secure, safe spot.
But they've also got the walk there and the walk back.
Yeah.
Which we actually organise that we all meet at the parade ground at RSL.
Yeah.
In the city, and we all walk over together. So it's that strength in numbers as well.
Yeah.
So we all meet there, we all go up together, and they've been absolutely fantastic for us.
36ers, they did the same thing for us. We got through the service entrance and that sort of stuff. And that's really good because it has sort of 12 seats in front of the box, so we can get back out in the crowd. We're in our own little space.
Yeah.
But you get the noise, you get the lights, you get all the stuff that goes on, but once again, if you feel like it's a bit too much, you can remove yourself.
Close the doors, but still see the game.
And obviously, sport's a massive massive thing that we can relate to.
Yeah.
So that's what we're sort of looking at. And then, what else we got?
We're allowed to take applications for Invictus this year, so we're one of those ESOs that's registered to actually take applications and nominate individuals to go over to the games, which is... Quite a good achievement. We got lots going on this year. We are in talks with Land Rover Australia to potentially get a car to do a mental health awareness sort of charity drive around the country.
Yeah,
Which we need Jammu for.
Yeah, of course. We need that's how cars run.
Jammu. Yeah, I ain't using petrol.
That's how we run. So that's an exciting discussion to have with them, or to continue having with them, to see if that works out. They're very, very optimistic. They'll be able to provide us with a brand new Land Rover, whether it be a Range Rover or a Discovery or a Voke or whatever. We don't really mind, but
as long as it's got wheels.
Wheels, and it's more reliable than my car.
And then obviously developing further relationships with you guys, for example. You know, we're slated to branch out into just trying to develop that. So, you know, we're normal people, normal-ish people.
Yeah. We say that. I wouldn't class
but the sooner we can close the gap of that, you know, they've got a few issues too. Yeah, we do, but we're still normal people. Yeah, we get involved and do this sort of stuff. So if you'd have asked me sort of 14, 16 months ago to do something like this, I'd probably tell you to go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known which way I was up.
But
we like to work with the people. That sounds really godly.
But to give the people what they want.
Yeah, we like to work with everyone. Like we're one of those... I like to think we're one of the only charities that actually, we do it because it actually gives us a purpose.
Yeah.
But meeting people like you guys, we've made relationship with like Fast Twitch, Peak, Sports Centre, Adelaide Oval, 36ers, and most of them don't cost us anything.
Yeah.
And it's just the relationships that you build and the awareness that you build. But we support Adelaide Oval and we support the 36ers. We support you guys and put you guys out on our Insta chats and stuff like that. And all that kind of stuff. So it's just supporting the community and people that are trying to do good.
And Jimmy's fitness program, that's high on our priority.
Yeah,
I have a fitness program.
Walking to the boat shed.
Is it the cafe to cafe? Is that how?
That's it. Well, no, because the cafes might be a bit far apart.
So. It takes a
not down Glenelg, they're not.
Yeah, exactly. That's all right.
That's why I exclusively walk in that area.
Yeah. And obviously I enjoy watching the videos of you being punched.
Yeah.
We don't have too many of those.
I think one's enough.
Yeah.
What about you boys? What's next for you guys?
World domination. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, we had a meeting at the start of this year and we're like, oh, it'd be nice to make some fucking money.
Yeah.
I can relate to that.
Yeah.
Like, as we sit in a three-story mansion.
Yeah, sipping on cabbage.
On North Adelaide's terrace.
Yeah, with a signed cricket bat and our own microphones each, yeah.
Yeah.
Living the high life. Oh, there's a helipad on the roof too. Yeah.
There's a hole in your head.
Yeah. Well, how do you think I get the helipad?
The roof's leaking again.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, because we've been doing this for like 2 years. Yeah. And we've like, we tried to grow it slow because we didn't want to, you know,
more than houses. We didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah, we started off just doing.
Makes
sense.
Relatable, yeah.
Well, we did a full year of just trying to create like a mental health, physical fitness, recipes, like a community before we even started selling Jammu.
Jammu was an accident. We started off
just in a bathtub one day and like,
yeah,
couple mates have a good old bath.
Put some spices in.
I've actually got a photo of us on our 30th birthday weekend in a spa bath together, wearing big hats
and by women's ladies hats.
Yeah.
And by spa bath he means a bath that has an extra nozzle. it's very cozy.
Very bidet downstairs.
Yeah. But yeah, this year hopefully. We're starting to find our stride a little bit. We're getting a bit of traction, which is good. Like, we've streamlined a lot of the processes, like, in the back end. So we started off doing things the Jimmy Bang Bang way.
You sound like a consultant. We're synergizing. We're streamlining the back end. Synergy.
Consultants get good money, though. Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, it's not interrupting. Yeah. We're doing good.
We've come into our stride a little bit. We've worked out where each other's strengths and weaknesses are.
Yours is not timing.
Nah, but someone's got to, like, go out and do stuff, I guess, and someone's got to keep me on the straight and narrow and do all the shit that I can't do, which is...
You need fire to create, like, you need a little bit of a spark to create something.
Yeah.
If you just have a spark, then your house burns down.
Yeah, exactly. So you need someone to channel it. Yeah. So, yeah, we work...
Fire out.
Yeah. And we're back to things being on fire again. Yeah. So, yeah, we've got a single serve, which you tried and said tasted like flat beer. So you're not allowed to have any more.
I'm actually going to make that. Like, I want to start some marketing like that, where it's just people with like average quotes.
Yeah,
good quotes are sick, but average quotes are generally funnier and have more quality in them.
Well, I just laughed when I came around and you were like explaining to your wife, like, this is the guy that does the rah rah like the Jammu, and she was like, oh, that stuff tastes like shit, and I was just like, oh well, at least she's honest. Then you took a mouthful of the single serve and you're like, ah, tastes like flat beer. Gave it to her, and you're like, put this in the fridge, I want it for later. We came back in 10 minutes later, and she drank the whole thing. Yeah, that, to me, was the biggest, like, compliment ever, because it's like, I'm not forcing you to drink that, and you're obviously enjoying it enough. You're either doing it because you enjoy it or because you want to piss your husband off. Either way, I'm okay.
I'm enjoying either of those solutions.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so you didn't mind it? She goes, oh, it's okay. I was like, you drank it in, like, 10 minutes. And she goes, look, it was all right.
I've never actually tried it, and we didn't get offered one, so...
What do you buy one to tie us?
Well, I don't get paid.
No, you got a hat last time.
I got a hat last time. Yeah. Benny was very upset about that.
Yeah, I know.
I was really hoping... it straight away. And I was going to say, sure I really... tagged him in it.
Yeah, I want you to put up more photos of it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't mind getting skin cancer because I don't have a hat on.
DBA will cover that. You're right.
So, yeah, just grow up like that will hopefully, bring us in some money so that we can start,
doing other shit.
But yeah, that was always when we wrote our business plan for DCE, the first point on the business plan was try not to be cunts. The second point was make some money. So
it says try. I specifically put try in there.
Things happen.
We had a long conversation about it because I think it did say don't be cunts. I'm like, oh, that's a bit strong.
Yeah.
It said try.
Try not to be. So yeah, that we just want to see where it takes us basically. And we've got a huge focus on like not just mental health for men, but because mental health affects everyone, but like our biggest sort of, I guess the biggest, what would you call it?
It's more like health and mental stuff that's meaningful. Like you see a lot of stuff, especially like on Instagram and stuff where people are monetizing health.
Yeah.
And they're not really.
Their own benefit.
Yeah. They're not really trying to help people.
A yoga pose and they're calling it mindful mental health where it's just them in their Under Armour paid for. products.
Stop plugging all these brands that we don't associate with.
Well, that's how you get associated with it. But like, some people are genuine.
Keep doing
that. Some people are, you know, just a little bit ignorant, or they're genuine in there. And some people are just straight out just trying to cash in on things.
Yeah.
But, like, that's where, you know, the mental health of men comes up a lot, because a lot of men, especially like alpha male men, won't talk about mental health. You know, that most of the guys that I know that struggle to talk about mental health, they don't need me to tell them how to do a workout plan. They don't really need me to tell them how to eat a bit healthier. Like, they kind of have that side of it
worked
down pat. So, whereas someone else might be, you know, all rainbows and lollipops, but
there's still a lot of shame behind men and mental health, though, as well.
Yeah.
Like, you're seen as the weaker person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you can't show emotion, which is not
healthy.
Not necessarily the right option. Whereas you see that in some more like European culture and like Russian culture and some of those other cultures, they can be very masculine and manly, but it's still, there's more availability to like cry, or there's more availability to, men are allowed to have emotions, I feel like, and maybe I'm just romanticizing other places, but especially Australian culture, it's very much just like shut up and get on with
it. Yeah, you're nice. Grab a beer and.
You know, there's a lot of people obviously advocating mental health now, but, you know, I'll use anxiety as a classic example. That seems to be the token diagnosis going around for everyone.
Yeah.
And I heavily emphasize this with elite athletes.
Yeah.
You may not have anxiety, you just get nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might be getting a little bit scared because you've got a race coming up.
Yeah.
Nerves are good. You know, you can channel them to be performance enhancers.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the anxiety that a lot of people who have it is debilitating to the point where we can't leave the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, I get nervous before races, or I get nervous because I've got an interview coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, yes, it's a form of anxiety.
Yeah.
But you can channel it. There's a control.
There's a spectrum. Yeah.
When it becomes uncontrollable to the point where, like I said, it's debilitating on your life and has an impact.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, it's just a token sort of thing. You know, I've got depression because my parents have broken up. But you're 27. You know, should be able to comprehend these sorts of things.
Yeah.
Like I said, everyone has some sort of sadness or something bad happened to them.
Yeah.
But you bounce back. It's that when you cannot bounce back and it is severely debilitating, is when you start having issues. So it's almost like not a token these days of, yep, I've got anxiety too, or depression or something like that. It should still be, I'm trying to get over it. Or, you know, I'm over it. I was sad for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's what happens. You know, your missus leaves you. Yeah, you're sad for a while. You drink for a bit. But then you bounce back overall.
Yeah. You get on Tinder.
Yeah.
Or Grindr, whatever bundle. Or...
That's how you guys met, right?
Yeah. As business partners.
Ooh, <circle. laughs>
yeah. But I think that's the biggest thing as well. Like you said, a lot of people use it to monetize it, whereas it should be advocating the right thing for, you know, we don't do this for the gratification or anything like that. It's just because we're big on the issues that we've been through, and I'm trying to help someone else who's going through it not have it so debilitating.
Mm. Yeah. We always say we want to help people and make some money. And it doesn't mean I'd really like to make money. Like, I'd love to be rich, but I wouldn't. Like, number one is help people. Number, like, just behind it is make some money. So if you have to compromise helping people or be dishonest or.
You don't want to sell out. Yeah. That's probably the biggest thing. Go back to it earlier when I was saying about all these multinational charities that are million-dollar charities, CEOs are on $200,000+ a year.
Yeah.
Money-driven.
They're selling a product that says it helps, and then it may help a small amount of people.
Yeah.
Whereas we want to help a lot of people, and if we can make an extra, I mean, we both pensions, so if we can make an extra $10,000-$15,000 a year.
Yeah.
Just to keep doing what we're doing, surviving now.
Yeah.
Like, it's just money in the pocket for a family holiday every year, and that's, to us, that's enough.
Yeah.
But I mean, if it comes in. And we get massive sponsorships, and someone says, we're going to pay you to run your charity. And sweet. None of that money we're going to pay you is used for the charity. We'll put extra into the charity.
Yeah. Why would you say no to that?
Yeah, I'd take it for sure. But then I'd probably end up finding that I'd be starting to put my own money. I mean, I already have since day one. My own money. You guys would have done it as a business.
Yeah.
You put your own money in because you believe in it.
Yeah.
And you believe what you're doing and how you're going to get there. I'm still waiting for Ben's check. As
they keep bouncing.
I'll just tell you the goal.
It's cute. Like, lately, he's been since he's come on board a little bit more as the ambassador. He keeps in meetings. He'll keep saying "we," referring to the charity as "we." Or me and him.
Hey, but that's buy, that's ownership. That's what you want. That's investment.
Buy-in.
Buy-in. Boom. Once you have buy-in, the rest is easy.
It's cute when he says
weird. I said sell all the gold, John. Damn it, you're fired.
So, but yeah, you do it for the love and what the message is and what you guys want to achieve. Like, and you guys are doing that through your product. So.
I was wondering where I can buy your merchandise, that's all.
www.dirtycleaneats.com.
There we go.
No.au?
Or.au. We've got both. We've got both, baby.
Worldwide. We have sold to America Prestige and Japan.
So you're like an international company?
International company.
Mm. International men of mystery.
Yep.
Right. So is there like...
Austin Bell?
Is there like when people usually go and do things for individuals, they usually get like promotional sort of gear?
Yeah, like a hat.
Yeah.
Or a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Have you guys got any upcoming sales or anything like that?
We've got something for Obi.
Yeah, for Obi that we're doing. Actually, what is it?
Obi 20 gets 20% off our product and $5 goes towards his charity thing he's doing for. It's specifically for, but we literally spoke to him last week. It's for veterans as well.
Yeah.
It's to raise awareness about mental health
and to raise the profile for, yeah, he's a Royal Marine
veteran. Yeah, from the British Army.
Englishman.
Yeah. Well spoken man.
Yeah. He had some interesting stories, and I reckon he would have had some more interesting
stories. He wants to come back on.
Oh, nice.
We want to get him back on after.
Yeah.
We should make it a big party.
What's he coming over for?
He lives here now. What do you mean? What's he coming over where for?
He's a wrestler.
He's wrestling.
He's the one that's doing the jiu-jitsu for 24 hours.
He's wrestling
straight.
For 24
yeah,
hours.
No, I feel you. This is what I'm dealing with.
You lead a horse to water. Fucking hell.
You can lead a horse to water.
Yeah, so he's rolling for 24 hours straight to raise money for Are You Okay?
Like down a hill or?
Yeah.
What date's that coming up?
Oh, shit, 23rd to the
24th. Somewhere around the 20th.
Starts at midday on the 23rd, finishes at midday on the 24th.
Yeah, where's that at?
Chow Kaizen.
Yeah, where is that? Because I didn't understand. Oh, Prospect. Okay.
For those listening at home, can you spell that?
Chaukaizen.
Well played.
Because he knows it's right.
That's the fun.
He sounded convinced.
Yeah.
You can't even.
That's my motto. Just say it with confidence.
Yeah. Bullshit baffles brains.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I believe nobody at home listening or when this puts up is going to write that down anyway.
Nah. Well, just Google it. Close enough.
Yeah.
It'll come up. Write prospect.
Yeah.
There you go.
It'll come up. Google prospect. Third item.
Just go start driving around prospect on the 23rd, see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, great job promoting someone else's charity. You guys want to give anyone a. Where can they find your stuff?
Facebook, mainly, just Heroes on the Home Front. Myself, Luke Adamson, or Benny Omens, I guess. Or Yoey Man, I think he's known as.
Luke's a bit of an Insta whore, so.
Yeah, I got on Insta now.
Gets the butt out.
Yeah, coming a bit more confident in using it.
Yeah.
But obviously being a small charity and like not having an office or a space, or we're just around the place all the time.
Yeah.
It's hard to find.
Keeping overheads down so the money goes to the people.
To the people, yeah. We got heaps of money in the bank. Well, not heaps, but we got money in the bank. It's actually hard to spend it.
Yeah, we don't have that problem.
Yeah. But it is actually hard to spend it. Like, the biggest thing that I found like with doing the charity thing is like you go out and approach people and you sound confident about what you're doing and what you're doing it for.
Yeah.
And they'll come on board. They won't charge you anything.
Yeah.
So we get all these donations and we started with Bunnings barbecues and stuff to raise money and did the charity walk last year. And you get all this money and then you go to somewhere and you say, oh, look, we're a veteran organisation. This is what we're doing for families and the kids and to bring the veterans and building the community back up and getting these guys back out. And they go, oh, we can give it to you for free.
Yeah, just take it.
And you're just like,
oh, but we were going to pay.
But, yeah, cool. And then this money just piles up and like, I might get myself a new Range Rover or something next year.
So. I'm not going to sell out. I'm moving to Venezuela.
I'm going to go to Dubai and hang out with James and get drunk on planes.
Make aeroplane complaints.
Yeah. But, yeah, the biggest thing in business and charities, I guess, is, like, if you don't ask, you don't know.
Yeah.
So if you ask someone a question, the worst they can say is no. I mean, much like you guys, you can approach hundreds of shops and they might say no, 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 and then you might get someone that goes, yeah, no worries.
Yeah.
It makes it all worth it when someone comes on and supports you, and especially year after year with, like, Adelaide Oval and stuff like that. I think this will be the third year we're doing it with Adelaide Oval, which is really, really good.
Sweet.
So, yeah.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Stop recording so we can talk about
dicks. Inappropriate stuff.
Inappropriate stuff.
Dicks.